वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानाधि सह कलौ नाश्रर्षामेश पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः. This is the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text Number 50, continuing the history of the life of Ajamil. And we will recite the verse together.
Panchabhi kurute soarthan pancha veda atha panchabhi ekaha to shodashena त्रीन स्वयं सप्तदशाः अश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः एकस्तु षोडशेन त्रीन स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः एकस्तु षोडशेन त्रीन् स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः एकस्तु षोडशेन त्रीन् स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः एकस्तु षोडशेन त्रीन् स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभि एकस्तु षोडशेन त्रीन् स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः एकस्तु षोडशेन स्त्रीन् स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः एकस्तु षोडशेन त्रीन् स्वयं सप्तदशोऽश्नुते. लेडीस्, पञ्चभि कुरुते स्वार्थान् पञ्चवेदाथ पञ्चभिः ekastu sorashenatrin swayam saptadashoshnute panchabhi kurate swarthan panchavedatha panchabhi sorashenatrin swayam saptadashoshnute Panchabhi, with the five working senses. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you a literal translation of this verse before we go through the synonyms and the translation, just to help demonstrate how it's virtually impossible to understand certain things without the help of our previous acharyas or Srila Prabhupada. Actually, what this verse means is, literally, it says that with five, he pursues his own interests and knows five with the help of five. The one, however, enjoys the three through the 16, while he himself is the 17. So let's see how Prabhupada helps us here. Panchabhihi, with the five working senses, voice, arms, legs, anus, and genitals. Kurute, performs. Swarthan, his desired interests. Pancha, the five objects of the senses. Sound, form, touch, aroma, and taste. Veda, knows. Atha, thus. Panchabhihi, by the five senses of perception. Hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and feeling. Ekaha, the one. Tu, but. Shorashena, by these 15 items and the mind. That means 16, in other words. Treen, by the three categories of experience. Happiness, distress, and a mixture of both. Swayam, he, the living entity himself. Saptadashaha, the 17th item. Ashnote, enjoys. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Above the five senses of perception, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses is the mind, which is the 16th element. Above the mind is the 17th element, the soul. The living being himself, who, in cooperation with the other 16, enjoys the material world alone. The living being enjoys three kinds of situations, namely happy, distressful, and mixed. Please repeat. Above the five senses of perception, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses, is the mind, which is the 16th element. Above the mind is the 17th element, the soul, and the living being himself, who, in cooperation with the other 16, enjoys the material world alone. The living being enjoys three kinds of situations, namely happy, distressful, and mixed. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Everyone engages in work with his hands, legs, and other senses just to achieve a certain goal, according to his concocted ideas. One tries to enjoy the five sense objects, namely form, sound, taste, aroma, and touch, not knowing the actual goal of life, which is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. Because of disobeying the Supreme Lord, one is put into material conditions, and he then tries to improve his situation in a concocted way, not desiring to follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nevertheless, the Supreme Lord is so kind that he comes himself to instruct the bewildered living entity how to act obediently and then gradually return home back to Godhead, where he can attain an eternal, peaceful life of bliss and knowledge. The living entity has a body, which is a very complicated combination of the material elements. And with this body, he struggles alone, as indicated in this verse by the words ekas tu. For example, if one is struggling in the ocean, he must swim through it alone. Although many other men and aquatics are swimming in the ocean, he must take care of himself because no one else will help him. Therefore, this verse indicates that the 17th item, the soul, must work alone. Although he tries to create society, friendship, and love, no one will be able to help him but Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Therefore, his only concern should be how to satisfy Krishna. That is also what Krishna wants. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. People bewildered by material conditions try to be united. But although they strive for unity among men and nations, all their attempts are futile. Everyone must struggle alone for existence with the many elements of nature. Therefore, one's only hope, as Krishna advises, is to surrender to him, for he can help one become free from the ocean of nescience. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore prayed, Ayi nanda tanaja kinkaram pititam mam vishame bhavam budhau krapaya tava pada pankajasthita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. O Krishna, beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean of nescience, and although I am struggling very hard, there is no way I can save myself. If you kindly pick me up and fix me as one of the particles of dust at your lotus feet, that will save me. In a similar way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sang, Anadi karma phale, pari bhavarna vajale, tori bari na dekhi upai. My dear Lord, I cannot remember when I somehow or other fell into this ocean of nescience, and now I can find no other way to rescue myself. We should remember that everyone is responsible for his own life. If an individual becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, he is then delivered from the ocean of nescience. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Upakadama Hyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guroho Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrijatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam
Shridatha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Shcha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Panchabhi kurute swarthan, pancha vedatha panchabhi, ekasto shodashena trin, swayam saptadashoshnate. Above the five senses of perception, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses is the mind, which is the 16th element. Above the mind is the 17th element, the soul, the living being himself, who, in cooperation with the other 16, enjoys the material world alone. This living being enjoys three kinds of situations, namely happy, distressful, and mixed. Let's begin with some review of Sankhya terminology. When we talk about the five working senses, anybody know what the word for that is in Sanskrit? The working senses? Karmendriya. Yeah, karma means work, indriya means sense. And then the knowledge acquiring senses, or Prabhupada says here the five senses of perception, what do you call those? Gyanendriyas, yeah. Gyana means knowledge, indriya means senses. And finally, we have the objects of the senses. What's the word for that? Matras. It's like, anybody know a verse beginning with matra? Yeah, by touching those objects, by contact with those objects, Krishna says. Matra sparshas tu kanzeya shitoshna sukadukada. Then we experience happiness and distress. That's exactly what's being stated in this verse. Matra sparshas, just by contact with the objects of the senses, one will undergo more than just happiness and distress. It's mixed also sometimes. There's an interesting little factoid here. Srila Prabhupada has translated this trin. The word trin is used at the end of line 3. Trin means the three, and there's some disagreement among the acharyas, not necessarily disagreement, but different definitions are given of this particular word as it's used in this verse. Srila Prabhupada, of course, here says it means happy, distressed, and mixed. That's three. What else could it possibly mean according to what we've been reading in these verses? Anybody remember? I was curious about this because I saw some different opinions amongst the commentaries. Way back in text number 41, we read, Rajas Sattvat Tamomayaha, characterizing the different kinds of existence or bhavas that we have in this material world. That means to say, at least it implies, that the three things that we can enjoy, or at least the three things that we experience, are these three modes of material nature. In text 46, we get a few more sets. There's at least four or five different ways to interpret this word trin. In text 46, Prabhupada translates it, the living entities are known as peaceful, restless, and foolish. Anybody remember? Or I don't think it's actually mentioned here, but peaceful, restless, and foolish. What kinds of living entities, or what kinds of bodies, I should say, what kinds of incarcerated existences that we may have in this world are of these characteristics? The peaceful type? What's that? Yeah, goodness. That's when you're a demigod, according to Acharyas in their commentaries. Restless is when you're a human being, because passion predominates in this world. And foolish is when you're an animal.
These are the different ways that we can live. So the devas are primarily sattvic, human beings are primarily passionate, animals are primarily foolish. Then again, happy, unhappy, or in between, that's mentioned in text 46 as it is today. Finally, we have another, because we're talking about dharma here. Remember, the context of this verse is the discussion between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. The Vishnudutas have asked the Yamadutas, tell us your understanding. Where are you coming from that you can do like this? We came to get this Ajamil because he's chanting the holy name, so what's your idea? And all these verses here, the Yamadutas are explaining, and they do have some realization here. They know what they're doing. The things that they're saying are not incorrect, but they had overlooked this principle of bhakti, divine grace. So another thing that they say, given this context of judging dharma, really, is trin can also mean religious, irreligious, or semi-religious. Now, these are all connected. Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they say that the word trin means the different kinds of sense enjoyment or sensual experience that arise from the karmendriyas, that arise from the gyanendriyas, and that arise from the mind itself. Karma, jnana, manondriya, I don't remember exactly what the terminology was, but that's the idea. Because we're talking about, remember, pancha. You have three sets of pancha here. It means the karmendriyas, the gyanendriyas, and the sense objects themselves. So those acharyas say that. It seems that here, Prabhupada, his interpretation follows Viraragavacharya. Viraragavacharya is a Sri Vaishnava. And the same thing is repeated by Vijayadvajtirtha, but Vijayadvajtirtha adds the fact that these different kinds of enjoyment or distress or mixture of the two, they're actually distinguished by the three modes of material nature. So that's not an incorrect answer either. Actually, all the above are true. So, ashnute means prapnoti. They undergo this kind of experience. Now, in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he's talking about, of course, we can do the math, panchabhi kurute swarthan pancha vedata panchabhi. That makes 15 right there in the first two lines. 5, 5, 5. Ekastu, you add one more, that means 16. Shodashena, train. Then he ashnute. He enjoys these three, which we've just discussed. But Swayam Saptadashaha, he himself is the 17th. And Prabhupada translates it here in his translation. He says, in cooperation with the other 16, he enjoys the material world alone. Now, the word alone is something that Prabhupada really emphasizes in his purport. He mentions it at least three, four times, as far as I can see. And this is an interesting point that he's making, that the way that Prabhupada, he chooses his words very carefully, and Prabhupada said that he does this as well. We can just appreciate this. It's so pregnant with meaning, everything that Prabhupada is saying here, every little sentence, it's very careful. Those who are editing have to be very careful with what Prabhupada has said. He says, nevertheless, the Supreme Lord is so kind that he comes himself to instruct the bewildered living entity how to act obediently and then gradually return home, back to Godhead, where he can attain eternal, peaceful life of bliss and knowledge. The living entity has a body, which is a very complicated combination of material elements, and with this body he struggles alone, as indicated in this verse by the words ekastu. Anybody thinking of any verses from Bhagavad Gita that corroborates this idea of how we struggle with our senses in this material world? Yeah, who says it's louder? Magam sho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Jiva bhuta. We are created as jivas, sanatana, eternally. But although we are parts and parcels of Krishna, jiva loke, in this world of conditional life, jiva bhuta sanatana manashasthan indriyani prakatisthani karshati prakatisthani. When situated in material nature, we are struggling. Karshati. Karshati means to struggle. And we're doing so alone. This is the point. Prabhupada is suggesting very strongly, but it's a new thing he's adding here. This is not coming from any commentaries that I can see, and I've read at least half a dozen on this verse. Prabhupada is emphasizing the fact that we're all in alone. And he gives the example, when we're in the ocean, somebody may be able to help you, but ultimately you have to swim. Sometimes you have these people, they try to swim across the English Channel. So people are following in the boats, and the newsmen are filming it, and helicopters overhead just in case, but the person has to do it all by himself. So this is our condition also. We have to swim through it alone. Generally, we don't do this. Generally, we take shelter of others in this material world because that is the immediately appealing thing. That's the immediately comfortable thing to do. It's called Prayas. But according to Shreyas, we have to go it alone. Our own Krishna consciousness, not to speak of our own Krishna consciousness, our own material consciousness, whatever we've created of our lives and whatever we're creating of our next life, that is our own thing alone. No one else can be blamed for it. No one else can really help us. We make our own decisions. We are responsible for those decisions. And at the time of death, we are tapped on the shoulder by Yamaraj or his attendants or not, depending on how we've acted alone. So next thing Prabhupada says is that therefore this verse indicates that the 17th item, the soul, must work alone. Although he tries to create society, friendship, and love, no one will be able to help him but Krishna, the Supreme Lord. So in most cases in this material world, people are not really interested in helping you, which is to say that if they do try to help you, there's usually some cut in it for them. There's no pure love in this material world. It's all more or less business arrangement, cooperation, honor amongst thieves, as Prabhupada sometimes says. There's always this selfish impurity contaminating all relationships in this material world. But even if someone does try to help, relatively speaking, help us, or even if we do try to help others, the fact is that we are not able to do that. No one is really able to help us. And we're not, by the same coin, we're not able to help anyone else. Prabhupada is often, more often than not actually, Prabhupada is knocking this mundane sentiment of welfare work, humanitarian efforts. Now we see that many devotees are also doing this sort of thing. But more often than not, it seems to me at least, that Srila Prabhupada is knocking it, because it's a cheating process. One cannot really do anything for someone else. Your karma is already written on your forehead, and nobody can change that. Once you take birth, it's already frozen. It's already frozen. What is going to happen is already set in motion. Nobody can take that back except for Krishna. Muktir vai pradata Vishnu. Vishnu is the only one who can liberate one from one's pradat karma. So no one else can really change anything. It's an ego trip if someone wants to enjoy the role of actually doing good for others. In most cases, that's what's going on. So we create society, we create friendship, we create love, but really nobody can help us except for Krishna. Therefore, the only concern should be how to satisfy Krishna, because no one else is going to satisfy you. No one loves you in this world. You don't have any friends in this world. No one can be trusted in this world. These are the hard, cold facts of reality. And from time to time, if we're fortunate or if we're unfortunate, these things will be revealed to us. If we're fortunate, Krishna will reveal them to us through divine grace. And if we're unfortunate, our own prarabdha karma will reveal it to us through our own foolishness. But somehow or other, eventually, it's a matter of time, before we recognize the fact that there is really no love here in this material world. There's no help available in this material world. It's as empty and discouraging as our existentialist friends say. But we have the positive alternative, unlike our existentialist friends, who generally they ended up killing themselves. Right? Didn't Sartre, I think he shot himself. You know, a lot of these people. Hemingway also, he shot himself. You know, Nietzsche. So this is the idea. Now, we have the positive alternative in that Krishna. And what is the verse in the Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada says it helps us? Peace formula, he often called it. Bhoktaram yajnatapasam sarvalokameheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the real friend. He's controlling everything. He's enjoying everything. And he's our friend. But we have to surrender to him on his terms, not on our terms. That's the only catch for the mind, the 16th element here. The key element, really. That determines whether we're going up or whether we're going down in this short human life, the mind. So the mind always fights. There was one devotee, sort of a Mishra Bhakta, I think he was, about almost 100 years ago now. He was British, World War I veteran pilot, and he was almost shot down in a dogfight with the Germans. His entire squadron was killed. He himself was saved. He was surrounded by German planes, and to save himself, he simply flew into the clouds and kept going up to try to lose these planes that were chasing him. So after that, he kind of blacked out. He didn't know what happened until he woke up sitting in the cockpit on the runway back in England. And that was quite a moving experience for him, so he became very philosophical, as someone does in such circumstances, if he's fortunate. And he began to look into various Eastern philosophies. Eventually he ended up in India, and he became a devotee. He became a devotee of Krishna. His name was Ronald Nixon, and eventually took initiation in the Radha Raman line. And his name was Sri Krishna Prema, I think. He wrote a couple of books that are still out, I think, for Bharatiya Vidyapalan. He was more of a Gyani Bhakta, but he had some nice realization, because someone had asked him, how can I see Krishna standing beneath a kadam tree, surrounded by gopis, playing the fifth note on his flute, with his threefold bending form and peacock feather, etc., etc., the characteristic description of how we see Krishna when we see Krishna. So he didn't appreciate the question so much, it would seem, because he gave a very sobering answer. He said, I would think that before we see Krishna dancing with the gopis in Vrindavan, we have to see Krishna as he's described in the Upanishads, which is as Vajra, an upraised thunderbolt weapon ready to strike us dead. Because as long as we're identifying with the mind, this is how we should perceive the holy name of Krishna, and this is how we will perceive the order of the spiritual master, and anything basically that's healthy for us. It's just like in the early morning when we are too tired to wake up and the alarm clock goes off, the alarm clock is the enemy. This is how it works. So this is, the mind is therefore key. Uddhredatmanatmanam natmanam avasadayet. And we have a limited period of time in which we have a mind that works. I know, because my mother's mind no longer works. She's older, she's got dementia, and she can't remember anything more than a few days ago. And this is the case with every one of us. We always assume that the facility with which we're working right now, and the healthy, full consciousness and the intelligence and whatever other minuscule qualifications we may have circumstantially as a result of our karma, we assume that these things are ontological, that they're intrinsic, they're what I am, actually. But it's not necessarily so. We don't know that we're not coming from a background of the serial killer, for example, or that we weren't, we don't know. We really don't know. If we are acting on the mental platform, it's just a matter of time before we turn into a serial killer. It's just a matter of time before we become a demigod again, and then become a serial killer again, and up and down like this. This is a few verses ago. This was actually stated. The Yamadutas were addressing the Vaikuntha Dutas, and they were telling them that those within this material world are all karmis, whether pious or impious. Both kinds of actions are possible for them because they are contaminated by the three modes of nature and must act accordingly. One who has accepted a material body cannot be inactive, and sinful action is inevitable for one acting under the modes of material nature. Therefore, all the living entities within this material world are punishable. So it's just a matter of time. We are temporarily enjoying a very good stint of conditional existence, in that we have basically a body that's working. There's no one here in this room, at least, who is a quadruple paraplegic, for example. There is no one here who is completely insane, although we might feel that way sometimes when we try to chant our rounds. We all have sound mind and sound body for a limited period of time. This is the point. It is a limited facility being offered. It is not going to last. You are going to lose it. And as they say, at least in devotional service, this is how it works. If you lose it or lose it, and Krishna can take it away from you. So we're working alone, and while we have good facility to become Krishna conscious, we have to take advantage of it because it will be lost. It's not a forever thing. It's going to be taken away from us, at least with the close of this body, and then we're going to be given another chapter of our conditional existence, and we don't know that it will be human. There's really no way to tell. All bets are off with the karmic game, because we're not in the realm of karma once we practice devotional service. We've decided that I'm going to go for this real thing, which is Krishna's mercy. And sometimes Krishna plays hardball. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport. He doesn't actually say it, but he comes back to the holy name of Krishna, really, because he cites a couple of verses that illustrate the spirit with which we approach the holy name. One's only hope, as Krishna advises, is to surrender to him, for he can help one become free from the ocean of nescience. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore prayed, O Krishna, beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean of nescience, and although I am struggling very hard, there is no way I can save myself. If you kindly pick me up and fix me as one of the particles of dust at your lotus feet, that will save me. When we discuss Sankhya, as we are doing today, at least a little bit, we have to be careful, because the Sankhya process is a mechanical process of extrication through very careful, judicious discrimination and selection of our associations. Sangha. It's all about Sangha. Sangat sanjayate kama. Our desire arises from our Sangha, and as someone pointed out a few days ago in class, Sangha doesn't just mean who you hang out with. Sangha means what your senses are hearing, what you're smelling, what you're touching, tasting, etc., etc. All of this is Sangha. And that process of Sangha is going on 24/7. So we have to be very careful about it. That is the goal of the Sankhya system, but that's a mechanical, and nowadays at least it's an atheistic system, and so it overlooks the most crucial fact here, which is Krishna's mercy. We really don't have. If you read this prayer from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives the indication that we really don't have any means of elevating ourselves. If our Krishna consciousness is based on making some endeavor to become Krishna conscious or to elevate ourselves through Krishna consciousness even, it's not going to work. It's simply not going to work. We have to approach the authority, Krishna or usually his pure devotee, and beg. And this is the idea that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was illustrating here. Finally, Srila Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur again. My dear Lord, I cannot remember when I somehow or other fell into this ocean of nescience, but now I can find no other way to rescue myself. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing this idea that there's no way to save ourselves. It's not explicit in the Shikshastika verse quoted here, although Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates. But Prabhupada is emphasizing this. We are alone and we cannot save ourselves. Finally, he says, we should remember that everyone is responsible for his own life. If an individual becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, he is then delivered from the ocean of nescience. We'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Arjita Prabhu.
Based on Indriyani Piranya Ahur, we have here the mind and then immediately the soul. But we know the soul is supposed to control the mind through intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's not mentioned here. I just wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah, it's not. There's only, how many are given here? 17. Only 17. The different Sankhya categories are actually given in different lists in different places. And not only the categories, but their definitions are sometimes different. Just like here. Voice, arms, legs, anus, and genital. These are the karnamindriyas that are listed here. But sometimes they're listed slightly differently. And sometimes there are 24, some say 25 elements. Sometimes even 28 are listed, I've seen. So it's not, I don't think this verse is even intended to be a comprehensive list of the elements of Sankhya, but it is dealing with those categories to some degree. That's what I would say. Otherwise, the missing element, intelligence, well, my friends, that is the purport by Srila Prabhupada. That is our intelligence. Anything else? Dhritakarma Prabhu.
So on the one hand, this purport is emphasizing the individual responsibility, but then it seems there are other angles, like the verse that Prabhupada often quoted, one shouldn't become a mother, a father, you know, a teacher, a guru, a leader, unless one can deliver one's dependence. So what's the adjustment?
What's the what?
Adjustment, the apparent contradiction.
Yeah, actually, I don't see a contradiction, at least not a very clear one. I think if one doesn't have the adhikar, well, in the 11th canto, Krishna tells Uddhava, Svaya adhikare ya nishta sa guna parikirtataha. It is considered to be a qualification when one attempts to do what one is actually potent to do, and does not attempt to do more than one is capable of, nor is satisfied with doing less than one is capable of. One has to do exactly what one is capable of doing. That's considered to be guna. And to attempt anything else is considered to be dosha, or a flaw. So I think if, with regards to that fifth canto verse, that one should neither become a guru or a father or a mother or a teacher or whatever, unless he can deliver his dependence, I think it's emphasizing the responsibility. And if one doesn't have the adhikar or the qualification, the prerequisite, prerogative is a good way to translate that term, adhikar. If one doesn't have that prerogative, then one should not try. Just like Mahaprabhu has ordered all of us to become guru and to deliver our country. So that's true. The order is an open order. It's standing order for all of us. We have to do that, but one should not do so before one's qualified. So it's not necessarily a contradiction. One who is responsible will not try to do more than he's capable of doing. Although ultimately we do have the responsibility to rise to that level of adhikar, and that will happen automatically by sincere cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Is that okay? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
400 cupcakes. Amazing.